The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Happy New Year. As we turn the page on 2025, I've been thinking a lot about the millions of people in this country who are immigrants and what it must be like to be one of them right now as we get ready for a new president to take office and the things that have been said about immigrants and what he's planning to do. So if I was an immigrant, I would be probably a little bit nervous. They're telling exchange students to show up at college before the inauguration. That's sort of a warning, isn't it? And I went back into the archives and I pulled out an interview with a woman who immigrated to the United States from India. She went to Wright State University. In 1997, she made her first appearance in the Book Nook to talk about her first novel. And she's gone on to a long career as a novelist. Her name is Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni. And we talked about her first novel back in 1997, and she talked about the immigrant experience and what that was like for her. Let's listen now to Chitra on the Best of the Book Nook.
How did all this come about? How did you get into this?
Into writing?
Mm-hmm.
I think I started writing about 9 years ago, and I did it mostly to make sense of the immigrant experience for myself, to kind of write in order to discover what it meant to be a woman coming from India, living in America, a woman of color in the Western world.
And you've been on Fresh Air recently with Terry Gross, and now you're doing this program, so you're really doing well.
Now I know I'm going to be rich and famous.
Chitra, Arranged Marriage, your book of short stories, received rave reviews. And I understand that this book came out of an experience that you had that was a near-death experience.
That's right. I think one of the reasons why The Mistress of Spices is such a different book from Arranged Marriage is because of that experience. About 3 years back, I almost died when my youngest son was born. And I had to stay in hospital for a long time and have a couple of surgeries. And when I lay in my hospital bed, in a very vague kind of inexplicable way, I got the idea for this novel because it seemed to me, and it's hard for me to put it into words, but it seemed to me that I was floating between life and death. And it wasn't a scary feeling. It was a very liberating kind of feeling. And the insight came to me that that is what we do. We're floating between many lives and deaths, many existences. And I wanted to give shape to it in a novel. And so I was delighted when the character of Tilo, the Mistress of Spices, came to me, because she is a woman who does that, who transcends many existences and lives in many different worlds and in many different times.
Tell us about Tilo, the Mistress of Spices.
Tilo is, she's a rebel. I think of her as a rebel. But she is a woman who is born in a mythic time in India, in a little village, and she ends up on the island of spices, where she learns the lore and the power of the spices so that she can then use them for healing. And then, as a mistress, she gets to choose where she is going to come and practice this skill. And she chooses Oakland, California, which, as you probably know, is a city very unlike the other cities in the San Francisco Bay Area. I think of it as a stepchild of the Bay Area because it has this reputation of crime and poverty. But I have lived in Oakland, and I think there is much more to the truth of Oakland. So I wanted to set a book in Oakland. And I thought it was also a very appropriate place to document the lives of immigrants because it is such a multicultural city. And so Thilo ends up in Oakland in a little spice store, and she gives the spices to people who come to her shop to heal them, to cure them of ills and problems and unhappiness. But then she falls in love with an American.
Raven.
Raven.
And Thilo, I don't know how much you want to give away about the plot, but she gets her start. I don't know if you would call her an untouchable, but she's definitely very poor and very unwanted when she starts. And she, I think the way you put it is, no one ever says don't. And she sees things.
Yes.
When she's very young.
Yes. She begins, right from the beginning of her life, she has supernatural powers. And therefore, in her home village, where she is at birth unwanted, partly because she is a girl child and partly because she is dark and therefore considered ugly, no one values her until these powers come to the forefront. And then she takes over the entire village.
And you have a fascinating way of describing her journey to Oakland, her apprenticeship, so to speak, learning about the spices. Let's see, today's Thursday. What's that, Chili's?
Thursday, yes, Chili's.
Each day has a special spice.
That's right.
And each person has a special spice.
That's right.
What's your spice?
I don't know. Some days I think maybe my spice is turmeric, which is the healing, compassionate spice. And on the days when I don't feel so healing and compassionate, maybe it's red chilies, the spice of distraction.
Let's talk about spices, because they are really characters in the plot. Each chapter is a spice.
That's right. The various sections of the book are named after the spices: turmeric, fenugreek, red chili, cinnamon. Each of them does become a character, which to me was one of the most fun parts of writing the book, seeing these spices become characters. And they did. They took on their own personalities and their own relationships with Thilo, and they have a very complicated relationship, just like human relationships, full of jealousies and amusement and all kinds of other fun things. And the spices were very important because I think they embody what is one of the major premises of the book, that in the most ordinary, everyday things of our lives lie magic and power. And I think that's true of the spices.
And for someone who has moved here from India, it's a connection.
Yes. Yes. Because I think the old smells, the old tastes, those are the things we carry with us as we move to a new land. They give us comfort.
As I read the book and the story unfolded, the fact that Thilo was not supposed to leave the store, and the first time that she does leave the store, just for a minute, she comes back and the spices are angry.
Yes, yes. Now, Thilo has a boundary. She has very definite boundaries that she's not supposed to cross. Her mistress' life is full of laws. One of them is she can't leave the store, and one of them is that she shouldn't get involved with the people who come to her store. And finally, of course, she must not fall in love. As the book goes on and she breaks these laws, the spices will get increasingly angrier with her.
She is supposed to sublimate her own desires and to be tuned into everyone else's desires to try to help them.
Right. And in this, I think she follows an old tradition of healers who, in exchange for their powers, are supposed to give up that personal aspect of happiness.
I love the way she waits in the shop and her customers come in, and she knows about them. She knows about their problems. She knows about their families. and she very surreptitiously sprinkles spices on them or slips a little spice in there. And it was just fascinating to me. I love herbs and spices, and I know that there is a whole language that we don't know in this country about these different spices. We've been deprived.
Yes, there is a very rich lore of spices and actually an entire science of herbs and spices in India. And you probably know it. It's called Ayurveda. I did a lot of Ayurvedic research when I was writing this book. But a lot of my knowledge also came just from family spice lore, things that my mother and grandmother would do when we were sick, the way they would use the spices, or maybe if we had a festival or a religious occasion, they'd use particular spices that were good luck. But I also have a confession, which is whenever I felt like it in this book, I freely made things up.
Good for you. And we won't know the difference, will we?
Well, I did put a warning in the beginning of this book, which says that the spices in this book should only be taken under the supervision of a qualified mistress.
I remember that disclaimer. Perhaps this would be an appropriate time to entice our listeners just a little bit and read an excerpt from the book, if you'd be so kind.
I'd be most happy. I'll read to you from the beginning of The Mistress of Spices. And this page is very special to me because when I started writing the book, this entire page came to me. And it's almost, I've revised many parts of the book, but this is almost in its original form. And anyone who is a writer knows what a gift that is. I am a mistress of spices. I can work the others too. Mineral, metal, earth, and sand, and stone. The gems with their cold, clear light. The liquids that burn their hues into your eyes till you see nothing else. I learned them all on the island. But the spices are my love. I know their origins and what their colors signify and their smells. I can call each by the true name it was given at the first, when earth split like skin and offered it up to the sky. Their heat runs in my blood. From Amchur to Jafran, they bow to my command. At a whisper, they yield up to me their hidden properties, their magic powers. Yes, they all hold magic, even the everyday American spices you toss unthinking into your cooking pot. You doubt. Ah, you have forgotten the old secrets your mother's mothers knew. Here is one of them again. Vanilla beans soaked soft in goat's milk and rubbed on the wrist bone can guard against the evil eye. And here another. A measure of pepper at the foot of the bed, shaped into a crescent, cures you of nightmare. But the spices of true power are from my birthland, land of ardent poetry, aquamarine feathers, sunset skies brilliant as blood. They are the ones I work with. If you stand in the center of this room and turn slowly around, you will be looking at every Indian spice that ever was, even the lost ones, gathered here upon the shelves of my store. I think I do not exaggerate when I say there is no other place in the world quite like this.
Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, The Mistress of Spices. I was really enthralled by your writing style. Who are some of the writers that you admire?
There are so many writers that have inspired me. I think in many ways I have been inspired by other women writers writing out of other ethnic traditions. They gave me inspiration and permission both at once. I love the writer Sandra Cisneros, writing out of the Hispanic tradition, Louise Erdrich out of the Native American tradition, Maxine Hong Kingston out of the Asian American tradition. I have learned many things from Indian writers such as Anita Desai and Vikram Chandra and Rohinton Mistry, Bharati Mukherjee. So there's a whole, I think people who speak of contemporary experience but have not forgotten the old myths, those are the writers who have touched me most.
And there's a writer from the Bay Area who has been on this program who's very impressed by you, Amy Tan.
Oh, yeah, I love Amy's writing too, and I was so delighted when she read this book and liked it and wrote a comment for the book.
Chitra, there's an undercurrent throughout the book of racism that people have to deal with in this country. It's subtle most of the time, but it's there.
Definitely. That was one of my themes in the book, because I think that is part of the truth of the immigrant's experience. It's a painful truth, but it's one that we have to learn to live with. For example, in India when I was growing up, there were many challenges, but racism of this kind was not something I faced. I was part of the mainstream. I was not the other. And when I came to America, I learned how it felt to be the other, to be the alien one, to be looked at with suspicion. And so a number of the characters in the book go through this as well.
And you have so many situations where the new generation, the young people growing up in this country, are being lost in their parents' eyes to our culture. Drugs, gangs, crime, otherness.
Yes, yes. And I think perhaps the story of Jagjeet in this book is one that has really touched me very deeply. It's one that I like to read, but even now when I read it, I find myself choking up. And in almost towards the beginning of The Mistress of Spices, this young boy, Jagjeet, comes into the store, and he is feeling very lost in America because he doesn't know English. And his parents cannot help him because they don't know much English either, and they're busy just trying to survive. And he faces a lot of racism at school. Children make fun of him in very cruel ways because he is different. He wears a turban. And one of the ways in which he learns to survive is to join a gang. And in some ways, he is being sucked away from his family into the darkness of America.
And out in California, we have the ultimate melting pot, many different ethnic groups mingling together. And I imagine Oakland is very much that way.
It definitely is. And so one of the themes in the book that was important to me was to show how Indians coexist with other ethnicities. In arranged marriage, I had looked or kept mostly within the Indian community. I had examined relationships that change in the coming to America. But here I wanted, in The Mistress of Spices, to talk about how do we live with other people who are different from us? What are the challenges? And so the characters love and hate each other in interesting ways.
It's my perception that in India, the caste system is breaking down.
Very much so. Many of the old systems are dissolving, and I think the caste system, in my understanding, and I'm sure for each Indian, their India is a little different, but I think the caste system is breaking down in many significant ways. And for me, that is a good thing, because it had been a way of separating people in society. And I think separations are not good. Separations that are externally created are not good.
And Tilo, her role in all of this is she's trying to break down those boundaries.
Yes, hers is a very paradoxical role, because as the Mistress of Spices, she is in a way supposed to uphold tradition and to preserve the boundaries. Her teacher, the old one, tells her, "You are going to help your people. Stay away from the other ones." But she can't. I think she begins to love all the people who come to her store, including the African Americans, including the Native American Raven. She just loves everyone.
I think a lot of different ethnic communities here in this country try very hard to insulate themselves from American culture to create the old world here in the new world. And that is so hard to do. It's my perception that a lot of members of the Indian community try to do that.
Yes, and I think, as you said, many ethnicities do this. I can understand that very well, and I can see to an extent the value of that, because there are so many beautiful things in our Indian heritage, for example, the sense of family, the respect for elders, and I can see why we would want to preserve these. But I think also when you come to a new country, whether consciously or unconsciously, you have made a decision to transform and to be transformed. It's just part of the natural process of what will happen to you as an immigrant. And you can't stop it. You can't fight against it. One of the characters in The Mistress of Spices, Geeta's grandfather, does that. And I have a great deal of sympathy for him as he's clutching onto the old ways. And he's so upset that his granddaughter is doing all these modern American things. And then, of course, she falls in love with a Chicano. And he's completely, completely flabbergasted by this. So I can see it from his point of view, too. But I see the importance of us mingling and learning about each other. And ultimately, I think learning to love each other. I think that's a very important part of our survival as a country and as a society in America, all of us together.
This past Thanksgiving, I enjoyed a vegetarian feast at our local Jain temple. And I was so intrigued by the Jainist beliefs, by their religion. I think that as cultures, we have so much to offer each other if we can just break down those boundaries and listen to one another instead of viewing each other with suspicion.
That's right. If we can get over that initial fear that we have of otherness, I think all our lives would be so enriched by each other, because I absolutely agree, and I think Thilo does too in The Mistress of Spices, that we have much to learn from each other.
You live in the academic world. You are a professor. Tell us about your other life, aside from being a writer.
Yes, I don't know that I would call my college that much of an academic college, though. I teach at Foothill College south of San Francisco. It's very much a college of the community. It's a community college, and I really like teaching there for that reason, because people who come there are very much people of the community. Many of them are going to college. They're the first ones in their families to go to college. I have a lot of immigrant students, a lot of older students coming up, ethnicities and ages and racial backgrounds and economic status. All of it is mixed up in my classrooms. So it's a very multicultural experience.
What are you teaching?
I teach creative writing and English.
They must be very impressed that you've had such success with your writing. Are you going to stay there for a while?
Yes, I like teaching, so I don't see any changes coming up very soon. But it is fun. It's fun for my students. But I have to tell you, what my students are most excited about right now is not so much the success of Mistress of Spices, but the fact that it's going to be made into a movie.
Oh, really? Tell us.
I was very excited about this myself. One day I was in my office writing, and I got a phone call. And the voice sounded like it was coming from far away. And the woman said, "I'm a director. I'm calling you from England, and I would like to make a movie out of The Mistress of Spices." And her name is Gurinder Chadha, and she's a very talented filmmaker, Indian filmmaker who lives in England, in London, and she made a film that I absolutely loved called Bhaji on the Beach. So when I heard her, I was pleased. I didn't even have to think twice. I said, yes, I like the idea. And then she went out and she got a producer, and the producer is going to be Wind Dancer, which is a segment of Disney. So it'll be an exciting marriage of different kinds of talents and visions.
I got a chill just hearing about the movie deal. How did you feel?
I was very excited, but I had been trained well. So after I told her, and very sincerely, how much I enjoyed my her work, I said, "You have to talk to my agent."
Good answer. One of those pat answers. The check's in the mail.
But since then, we have become friends. When the book came out in England, I went to London and I met Gurinder. She showed me around the Indian part of London, Southall, and that was very fascinating because it's very different from the Indian communities in this country.
And India was formerly a British colony, and there's quite a large Indian community in the United Kingdom.
Yes, and they are an older community, and they came over more as a working class community as opposed to much of the Indian American population here, which came in post 1965 as professional communities. So there's a whole different feel. Very interesting.
You've been listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Going back to 1997, my first interview with the writer Chitra Banerjee Devakaruni for her first novel. And we dubbed that off a cassette. And she came by the station back in 1997 to talk about the book. On 91.3 WYSO, fact-based journalism in service of democracy. As I mentioned at the opening of the program, I've been thinking a lot about immigrants, people like Chitra, who came to this country from another place and has done well. She's had a great career as a novelist. Immigrants are truly the lifeblood of America. They always have been. We've all been immigrants at some point other than the native peoples that lived here. But if you went back far enough, you probably had immigrants back then coming across the Bering Strait thousands of years ago, their ancestors. But we won't talk about that. I'm just here to talk about the fact that I'm thinking about immigrants. I'm thinking about my dad's parents who came to this country from Lithuania and made lives for themselves in Chicago. Good lives. Yet, during the over half a century that they lived in Chicago, they never learned how to speak English, other than swear words. They knew their swear words, but other than that, they lived in a community that was mostly Polish and Lithuanian. They did learn fluent Polish after moving here, but they had no use for English, and they were perfectly functioning members of society, valuable members of their community. When my grandparents died, they owned an apartment building. They were good landlords. They treated their tenants well. And I think about the immigrants. I think about my mother's grandparents who came here from Norway and made good lives for themselves. We are all descended from immigrants. Maybe 50 years ago, 100, 200, 300, 1,000, all of us came here from somewhere else, at least our ancestors did. Think about that as we think about the immigrants in our country who are feeling some concern right now before the inauguration of Donald Trump. For the Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. It's always a pleasure to be with you here on Saturday mornings at 7 and on Sunday mornings at 10:30, and Happy New Year.